and you're on the front porch. Governor Justice has lit the lantern on top of the Capitol. He says that cuts to DHHR could lead to a medical crisis. Legislative leaders disagree. This week, we're going to ask whether or not the state of West Virginia is truly in a crisis. Also, our own Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee has written an op-ed talking about proposed cuts and other reforms to the food stamp program in West Virginia. Are these necessary? Are they good? We'll find out more from him. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joined by Rick Wilson. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And Lori Lynn. She's our conservative columnist and lawyer. Hey, Lori, how you doing?
Hi, Scott. Good.
You don't really think that we should be lighting, the governor should be lighting the lamp on top of the Capitol. Why is that?
Forgive me if I overuse the word dumb in this discussion, because I really think that it is dumb. I mean, this is a lantern, a signal that has been used for states of emergency traditionally. I think the last time it was used was last summer when we had the flooding that killed several West Virginians, put people out of their homes. I think using it in this kind of political stunt way, again, does it hurt people? No, it's really just a symbol anyway. But what happens when we have a Republican governor in a few years and he says or she says, well, I think it's a crisis that teacher unions are preventing us from having accountability for instructors, and I'm going to light the emergency lantern. For that matter, we've had an opioid crisis. I think most people agree that it's a crisis in the state for several years. Why hasn't the lantern been on for that?
Well, I think, is it a stunt? Yeah, in the sense that it's something to get attention, but I think there's some reality around it. I mean, the cuts that have been proposed are pretty drastic, coming after, what, 6, 8, 10 years of further cuts to an agency like DHHR. And if you make further major cuts in that, it's hard to avoid taking things out of Medicaid, which is a program for the most vulnerable, which also brings home a huge federal match, about a 3-to-1 match. Some of the Medicaid dollars keep people in their homes instead of at nursing homes, which actually saves taxpayers money. It is a pretty serious thing.
So the legislature, they came out with a budget framework that didn't lay out exactly where they would make cuts, but had some suggestions. And one of the suggestions that they had was cut $50 million from DHHR. They didn't say where or how. We looked this up before the show. It's a $1 billion-plus agency. So, Rick, one of my questions back to you would be, is there not $50 million to cut anywhere in that program?
Well, they've already cut quite a bit, and a lot of the money in the DHHR budget is federal money, which comes through for things like foster care and, again, for Medicaid. And the thing about Medicaid is the people who are actually most expensive, I guess, on Medicaid are the elderly and people with disabilities. Medicaid covers about 70% of nursing home days, about half of the births of children. This was before Medicaid expansion. Healthy kids and low-income people are the cheapest to cover. The most expensive ones are the elderly. These are people who've worked all their lives. They have spent down their assets in many cases. Yeah, it would be hard to cut much more into that without cutting in a lot of other money we're bringing in with a big economic effect.
We're pretty far afield from the question of, do you light the lantern for all this? I mean, I would just say this is a legitimate debate to have. Do we want to really cut $50 million from DHHR? It's a little bit hard to take the left seriously about the $50 million when they would be saying the same thing if it were $10 million or $15 million. You know, surely there is some amount that we can cut out of a $1.3 billion budget without impacting services that we might be sitting here consider vital. But again, that's a substantive debate. That's a debate that we should have and will have, I suspect. That's different from, do we turn on this light on the top of the Capitol and declare this an emergency?
This is a shock, but Lori and I may not see exactly eye to eye on this. Actually, I think it's kind of cool that he is getting out there, that he's making the case that and he's obviously not a career politician, and he's probably doing some things in a way that would make career politicians wince. But I think to his credit, I think he's really getting out there and he's really publicizing the issues and really trying to educate people about it. And also, I think there's polling that shows most West Virginians don't want to see major cuts in education, K-12 or higher, and things like DNR and other things like that. There's real support for these services.
Well, Lori, what do you think? Is this effective? And how are lawmakers, Republican lawmakers, reacting to all this?
That really is the question, is it effective? Unfortunately, we don't really have polling the way you have national polling, looking at, you know, approval ratings of the president. We don't have that here on the state level. That would be really interesting to see if we could have it. It feels to me almost like he read a book about using the bully pulpit, you know, and he's just kind of going at it with a blunt instrument. I'm not sure how many people really are. I mean, our minds really, our hearts going to be won by turning on the light on top of the Capitol dome. I kind of doubt it, but who knows? And like you said, he is getting out there. He is being very visible, certainly a lot more visible than his predecessor. My sense isn't really that the Republican legislators are, you know, cowering in fear over, you know, the great groundswell of public opinion that Governor Justice is building up. But we'll see.
We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about food stamps, exactly who should get them, and what sort of rules should there be around receiving food stamps here in West Virginia. But first,
I'm Dave McClanahan, Director of Engineering for West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You're familiar with our excellent radio and television service, but did you know we also provide emergency communications on our network of towers? Homeland Security, the Emergency Medical Services, Technical Support Centers, County Communication, State Police, Sheriff, they reside on some of our towers during the latest floods. During the derecho from a few years ago from Hurricane Sandy, we had power outages statewide, and our backup generators and so forth still provided for our service plus the emergency communications to go on even with the rest of the state dark.
Protect West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Go to wvpublic.org.
All right, we're back. We're talking with Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee and Lori Lynn about food stamps now. Rick, you've done an op-ed about suggested changes to the food stamp program. And to set it up, there was also an op-ed in the Daily Mail from Senator Gaunch, basically explaining why he thought that these changes were needed. He said that there is fraud in the program that needs to be addressed. He said that able-bodied adults should be expected to pull their weight either through volunteering 20 hours a week or by finding work or by going to some sort of training. He said that people in TANF already have this requirement. So my question to you, Rick, is why not then? Why not have these requirements for people who are receiving food stamps, able-bodied adults receiving food stamps?
Well, I think if you do it right, if you have really good case management, you could probably do it. In Columbus, Ohio, for example, they've worked with this population. They've identified obstacles, you know, whether it's transportation or health or there's other undiagnosed issues, and had done that kind of case management to help people find the kind of placements. We don't really have that capacity here. And to see what happens, all you have to do is look at the 9 counties where they did implement this program.
Rick, you wrote in your op-ed today some of the numbers from that 9-county pilot program. What were they?
Well, remember, these are the 9 counties where unemployment is least bad and where the situation is better. They tend to be more urban. There tends to be fewer transportation problems. What they found, basically 5,417 people were cut off the program. Very few of those found work. 14,000, I think, who went through a training program, a tiny percentage got jobs.
259 gained employment.
What they found that overall, this is according to the DHHR, the percentage of working ABODs proportional to the total SNAP population held steady since the work requirements were put into place. So what the real deal is, a lot of these people are working, but they can't get hours above 20 hours a week, or they have transportation issues, or they're caring for another family member, or they have undiagnosed physical or mental things, and some are homeless. So, yeah, you can cut them off. And basically, that just means more people turn up at food pantries that are already stressed, and it takes a lot of federal money out of the economy.
And I know all those situations are true, undiagnosed illnesses and special circumstances. But there are also folks, you know, they're addicted to drugs, and this is just enabling their addiction. Is there a special case to be made for not giving food stamps to able-bodied adults?
Sure. And there's certainly a case for limiting the time, especially here in West Virginia. Issues of mobility come into it. That is to say, how long should we subsidize an able-bodied adult in, say, McDowell County who can't find a job, you know, legitimately because there aren't many jobs there, versus saying we will give you this assistance for, you know, X number of months, and then after that, the nudge is move somewhere else, move somewhere where there are jobs, come to Putnam County, go to Charlotte or Columbus. And I think that's a legitimate question to ask. I mean, we all have ancestors, most of us who crossed an ocean in rickety boats and left their family and friends behind to go in search of a better life. I don't think it's too much to ask people move out of places where there isn't work. I mean, that's one issue. There are, you know, obviously a whole number of dimensions to this, but I think that's an important thing to talk about.
You know, one thing I'll just mention is that SNAP is a really quick way to get money circulating through the local economy. Most of the SNAP money goes straight to businesses. The money lost due to the pilot program in Huntington, again, which didn't get more people working, was enough to cover about 700 full-time jobs at the state's minimum wage. And I think some people think, okay, if we cut these people off, that means the worthy poor who are, you know, some imaginary group, there will be more for them. That's just not the way you do it. If you cut it out, that's just federal money that doesn't go there. SNAP's part of the Farm Bill. It's supported by big business, by agribusiness. It circulates in farmers markets, grocery stores, convenience stores. You take it out, it's just gone. So if that makes you feel better, knock yourself out. But
Senator Gonch points out in his op-ed that we have examples of people, West Virginians, using their SNAP debit cards in places like Hawaii and the Virgin Islands. So I think it's fair to ask, what are you doing in Hawaii using your food stamp debit card?
To me, the bigger question that you're bringing up is, it seems like we have a system right now that neither wants to spend the energy or the time to help people with severe problems, poverty, disability, lack of education, transportation and mobility issues. It takes a huge amount of resources to get that person independent and ready for work. So we don't want to do that. But on the other hand, we don't like the idea of Americans starving in America. And so we throw food stamps at people, or we give them an SSI disability check with no program to help people get work. In my life, the dignity of work has been this huge central theme. I think you would agree, Rick, that's an important thing for people. And yet we've created systems that seem to keep people alive, but don't help people get to work.
So the quality of jobs has deteriorated so much that a lot of people have to depend on these kind of things just to be able to afford to work their low-wage jobs. So one way to look at things like SNAP is we're subsidizing low-wage employers. We're covering Medicaid, we're helping with child care things so they can continue paying people very low wages.
In this case, if you're meeting the work requirement, you keep SNAP.
Only if you get a certain amount of hours per week, if you definitely get 20, which some people can't get, things like that. Also, I want to talk about the out-of-state issue because this one's like, you know, this is going to sound snarky, but oh, God, someone forgot to chain down the poor people, you know. Gee, you know, do you want to have, like, patrols at the state border like they used to have in the South? We have border counties. There's no law that prohibits low-income people from visiting their families. Poor people have a disproportionate share of family members in the military. $82 billion of SNAP payments were spent at military commissaries over the year. 1 to 2% of people on active duty in the military have families that are eligible for SNAP. So, I mean, that's a good part of the out-of-state thing you're looking at, too.
I just remember when we were talking about Hillbilly Elegy, which I don't mean to keep coming back to. I know it's very controversial, but there's a section in the book where J.D. Vance talks about working in the supermarket and seeing people come in with their food stamp cards and talking on, you know, expensive cell phones that he couldn't afford. Things like that, if you want to be helping people, you need support for that. And I think when you see things like somebody in Hawaii using their food stamp card, it just sets off alarm bells in people's minds. You're totally right. There could be an absolutely legitimate reason. But again, I think we can all agree that there are abuses of it. I mean, Senator Gonch points out that our monitoring system in the state is 20 years old to detect fraud and abuse. One thing he wants to do is modernize that, which seems like a completely legitimate thing to do.
It's a pretty expensive proposition, and it would bring in these third-party out-of-state people to get paid public money that could have gone directly to monitor this program. So, yeah, it's a gravy train for them.
I worked at a grocery store for many years, and we did a lot of WIC checks. And the WIC program was very specific about what people could buy. It was more of a pain in the butt to administer, but I don't hear as many complaints about women buying eggs and cheese and milk and, you know, healthy foods for their families. What if we turned food stamps into the sort of program that was more limited in what you could buy? And what you could buy would basically be healthier foods. Lori?
Yeah, I do think WIC is a really interesting contrast. I mean, it's a good way to study it in a way because it is so different. There are very, very limited things. So you can't buy whole milk anymore with WIC. You can only buy skim. They're really, and like you said, I imagine it is a lot more difficult for the grocery stores who are having to administer this. But I wonder if there is, you know, research out there on the effectiveness of it versus SNAP, where you can really buy anything, including those sugary beverages.
And I mean, I'd be willing to look at the sugary beverage thing. There was a bill last year that would have made SNAP, what you could get with SNAP, more like what you could get with WIC. The trouble is a lot of people in West Virginia live in food deserts where there's just not a grocery store that has those kind of things in it. So that would really limit.
Yeah, I would say, though, that the grocery stores might respond to the need. If these are grocery stores that are selling to people who are using food stamps, and all of a sudden their food stamps don't buy sugary pop, but they do buy eggs, and people are buying more eggs, then I think the grocery stores respond by stocking more eggs. I'm a fan of this, and I think other people have looked into this, say that the main reason this isn't happening, frankly, is agriculture.
The food industry in general, I mean, the Beverage Association would be very upset if you tried to cut sugary drinks out of SNAP.
I do think it worked toward, you know, some of the criterion, but you'd have to address the food desert issue and not, you know, go to Mingo County, go to McDowell, places like that. There's not a lot of places where you can get fresh vegetables.
When I first came to West Virginia, I was part of this project that went around and actually had to try to live off of the food stamp budget of a low-income family and do it in places like these food deserts you're talking about, Rick. You know what you end up buying? You buy a lot of crap. You buy a lot of really cheap, filling things. You definitely do not buy fruits and vegetables that are fresh, especially in these places where they're very expensive, even more expensive than in rich communities like the South Hills of Charleston. And so, you know, you kind of see this pattern that people get into where because they're low income, they can only afford crappy food, and that makes them unhealthy.
If you think it's fun to live on like $3 or $4 a day in food, try it, you know.
I have just an observation about groceries generally in West Virginia. When I moved here from Northern Virginia, which is a much more expensive place to live generally than here, I expected our food budget to go down. The budget for virtually everything else went down, housing, gas, things like that. But in fact, it went up, which surprised me a lot. Kroger is the main grocery chain. You can shop, you know, Walmart or Target, but Kroger is really the supermarket chain. Whereas in Northern Virginia, I had four or five different grocery store options within a couple miles of my house. And prices were lower, things like vegetables, meat. And I don't know if part of that is it's more expensive to get it here, but it was noticeable. We spend more money here than I thought we would, and that surprises me.
So, Rick, what's your Bible verse for the week?
Isaiah 58:10. If you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness and your gloom be as the noonday.
That's the Front Porch for this week. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, along with Lori Lynn and Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. We'll see you next week.